Hello.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
Hello.
Woohoo! Success. We have the technology. There we go.
I'd like to take responsibility for it, but I didn't do anything apart from sit and watch Bryony struggle. So, but we got there. Sorry, it's so late, Cara.
That's all right.
Fly through it.
That's all right. I love it. You're organized chaos.
Definitely something like that. So how are we doing this, Bri?
We're recording now. I can edit this bit out, but we are recording now. So it's Cara's case.
Cara's case, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
What case is it? Just see if I know.
Shanda Scherer.
Oh, I've not. I don't
is know that the name. Young? Is that the girl who got beaten in the car?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, I know it. Yeah. Okay.
I don't. So what should we do? Introduce like we normally do, and then.
Then we'll, you carry on and then we'll just ask you questions.
Yeah, okie doke.
So what we'll do, Cara, is you'll be able to hear our intro in that and then we'll say we've got a special guest, blah, 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 introduce yourself type thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, cool. You good with that?
Yeah, is my sound all right? I'm just sat with my laptop on my knee. Is that all right?
Yeah,
it sounds okay. Fine. Can you hear us all right?
Yeah, I know, you're clear as anything.
Fabulous. I was going to chit-chat with you for a little bit, but I don't want you to be late to pick up your kids, so maybe we can do that later day.
It's all right. Hubby's here now, so I haven't got the time straight. Yeah, he's back.
Oh, good. Oh, yeah, brilliant. How are you feeling about it, then? Are you nervous? You good to go? What's?
I'm a bit nervous, but I'm just going to treat it as a chit-chat with you two, so.
That's what we do, pretty much.
Yeah, I know. I feel like I know you two. It's really weird.
Say whatever you want, because everyone will criticise you for it anyway.
Yeah.
Oh, God, yeah, I'm not looking forward to the haters, if there is anything. Oh, never mind.
Do you know what I will say?
It's only me that gets hate.
Yeah,
fine.
Usually. And we don't get a lot of hate anymore. We've weeded those people out, haven't we? You get the odd one, but on the group we don't anyway. Sometimes you do if on the actual Spotify thing, but fuck them.
Yeah, exactly.
Do what Sam does and just be ignorant to it all.
Yeah, just don't lurk. It's easier that way.
Yeah, and not that I swear loads, but you can swear, can't you?
Yes. Swearing's better. It's better for you.
I don't think it would be our podcast if there wasn't bad words.
No. Yeah, you're allowed to swear.
Okay, then. Yeah. Right, fuck it then. Let's go.
Right, Bryony's just going to do the intro bit, Cara, and we'll get going.
Cool.
Is it my going first?
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry, we have this conversation every time, don't we? And I was like, is it me? Right, okay. Hello, welcome to Trust in Evil.
I'm Sam.
And I'm Bryony.
And today, it's neither of our cases, is it?
A special guest.
Special case. So I put on Facebook a little while ago that I was looking for people to come join us. And we had Chris, who was great. Lovely low voice. That we nice to have a male perspective as well, wasn't it?
Yeah, really nice.
But I'm excited today because today we have one of our, listeners and one of our Facebook members, group members, come join us at Trust in Evil, if you haven't already. Cara, and she's written a case for us. So what we're going to do is we're going to do a chit-chat case soon, but we thought today we'd just introduce Cara and let Cara tell us what she wants to tell us. So take it away, Cara.
Hi, I can't promise you a lovely, low, soothing voice, but I'm definitely a special case, so we'll see how we get on.
Our voice annoys people anyway, so it'd probably be better than ours, Cara, don't worry.
Oh, no, I love your West Country twang. I love it. But yeah, okay, so I'm just going to cover this case, and you girls just dive in or ask any questions or anything you want to know. I can't promise I'm going to be as slick and professional as you two, but just bear with me. Okay, right.
It's like we just got called slick and professional.
I'm looking at Sam like,
You're like, yeah.
Cara, are you sure you've got through to the right people?
No, honestly, you and the Morbid Sisters are like my favourite true crime. So.
Oh, don't. We got knocked down for that. Someone was like, oh, you're just trying to be just like Morbid and you just can't cut it. And I was like, well, I'm really flattered for you to anyone to say that.
Yeah.
I was like, Jesus Christ, I'm really flattered. But yeah, thank you for that. That's flattering. Sam has no idea who they are.
Yes,
there.
I do. They're literally one of the ones that I do listen to.
Oh, okay, fine.
Okay, well, I'll take it away and we'll see how we go, shall we?
Yeah, let's go
for it.
Okay, so this is a case I came across like years ago. It's one of my first true crimes that I came across. And I think it piqued my interest just because I'm just more interested in female murderers for some reason. I think because like 90-odd% of murderers are male, aren't they?
Yeah.
So when you get the females, it's a bit against the grain and you think, oh, that's interesting.
That especially makes a bit when different.
Especially when they're young as well, which is the case here. So, my case, it's the brutal and disturbing abduction, torture and murder of 12-year-old Shanda Scherer by four teenage girls in 1992. Does it ring any bell?
For me, it does, yeah. But I know most of them anyway.
Yeah, it doesn't ring any bells for me, but I'm quite interested in 1992. That's sort of our era, isn't it?
Where we were at the glory years.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was my era. I think I'm a little bit older than you two, but yeah, 90s. Yeah, take me back to the 90s. But yeah, perhaps even more shocking was the fact that the four of the girls who were involved in this murder are today all out of prison, free and living their lives.
Really?
So, yeah, so let's dive in. So who's Shanda? Yeah. Shanda Renee Scherer. She was born on the 6th of June, 1979, to parents Stephen and Jacqueline in Pineville, Kentucky. Her parents divorced when she was young and she moved away to live with her mother and her new husband in Louisville. When that marriage subsequently broke down, her mother moved her and Shanda to be closer to Shanda's father and stepmother in Indiana and enrolled her in a new school, Hazelwood Middle School, in 1991. Mm-hmm. By all accounts, Shanda was a good student, regularly obtaining good grades, and she also had a close and loving relationship with both of her parents. She was a typical girly girl who loved makeup, hair, dance and cheer. And if you get a chance to Google her image, if you have a look, to me, she looks way older than 12. She's got that classic, remember when it was all about the volume in the hair, wasn't it? She's got this huge, big, curly hair. Really pretty.
She's very pretty, isn't she?
Yeah, really pretty. Looks more like 14, 15, though, I'd say, than 12. But yeah, Google the image if you get a chance.
I'm trying to, but I'm not spelling the name right.
Yeah. Yeah, Shanda Scherer. Yeah, she's... But you'll see when you come across it.
Yeah.
Anyway, she started at this new school, and it was here that she met an older girl, Amanda Heverin, who was 16. The two initially didn't get on, and they were actually involved in a physical fight, which resulted in them being put in a detention or isolation. And it was here that they actually became friends. So I guess they were separated from the rest of the school population and got chit-chatting and became friendly. Yeah. And this subsequently turned into a romantic relationship with the two exchanging love notes. Apparently, it was actually quite sexual, this relationship as well. I watched a Dr. Phil on it, and Amanda Heverin, who was 16, said that it was Shanda that was making all the moves on her, and she knew exactly what she wanted and what she was doing.
I'm not going to lie, though, right? She can say whatever she wants now, can't she?
Wow.
Exactly. And
do we know much about sort of her sex life before? Did she lose her virginity to her? Do we know anything about that?
No, it doesn't really make comment on that. I mean, at 12, I was playing with my dolls still. I wasn't really, I don't know if it's enough. And that was
what
9.
What were we doing at 12?
What were we doing at 12?
Playing on the railway tracks, like
yeah,
idiots.
Yeah, playing on the railway tracks. We weren't having sex.
No.
No, maybe she was just more mature. I don't know. Or maybe Amanda's saying what she, like you say, she can say what she likes now. And she was the predator, if you like. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. But anyway, they exchanged love notes. Because again, this is the 90s. So it's before Snapchat and WhatsApp and all that caper. So it's all about notes. And I guess you boxed, didn't you, and ring people. But that was about the extent of it.
Yeah, we were ringing. Or we were just ringing everyone off the phone box, didn't we?
Oh, yeah. Reverse charges.
Yeah, it was great.
Give a random name. Brilliant.
Ringing up boys and putting the phone down when the grand answered or something. Her and Amanda have started this relationship. So at this stage, I'm going to introduce the first perpetrator in this this crime story, which is 16-year-old Melinda Lovelace. Now, Melinda had previously been involved in a year-long relationship with Amanda Heverin.
Oh,
actually, year-long, isn't it, at that age?
Especially given the age, yeah. I was just thinking that is, well, it's got to be the first serious relationship, I would think.
Yeah, because at that age, you had a different boyfriend or girlfriend every the week, didn't you, really? Crossing off all the names on your pencil case and putting the new one in.
Yeah, you're talking sort of like your first childhood puppy love sort of situation, aren't you?
Yeah. So when she found out about Amanda and Shanda, she became insanely jealous. She was not happy at all. She, I think, well, when we learn a bit more about Melinda's background, you'll understand why. But yeah. I think it was really the first taste of love and affection she'd had with this Amanda. And the fact that the chance that she might lose that sent her crazy almost.
So it was more like a need than a want.
Yeah, I think so. I'll tell you a bit about Melinda's home life and you can draw your own conclusions. But her home life was very troubled and very abusive, mainly to do with her father, Larry. Now, he was a Vietnam vet. And I think back then they came back and they had all sorts of problems, didn't they? Things like PTSD and trauma, and which we treat now, don't we? Or we help, try to. But back then, I don't think they did. So
wasn't it at all, was it?
Wasn't recognised.
No.
So Larry, he was physically, emotionally and sexually abusive towards Melinda and her two elder sisters. He would also abuse his wife, Marjorie, frequently raping her and forcing her to have sex with other men. During one unconsensual orgy at the couple's home, Marjorie actually attempted to take her own life, an act she would repeat several times throughout the girl's childhood. I mean, this Larry, I think he was ultimately a sexual deviant because he would also do really odd things, like if the girls had friends around, he would make a show of getting their underwear and sniffing it in front of them and stuff. Just real inappropriate things like that.
Yeah. It didn't seem like he's hiding it, did it? It was just sort of out there for all to see.
Exactly. It was definitely not a happy or stable household.
No. This was all in front of the girls. I mean, obviously the sexual abuse towards the girls was in front of them, but I'm thinking like the orgies and the abuse towards the mother, I get the idea that it wasn't hidden from the kids.
No, it was all in front of them. And the suicide attempts as well. Melinda was frequently as well, not just one-offs, like... quite damaging. He was also in and out of work. He was a railway worker, he was a postal worker. None of these jobs worked out. For example, when he was a postal worker, he went and picked his post up and then just went home.
Sorry, didn't laugh.
It was never
going
to work out, was it?
Remember that woman that was like storing one in a house?
Yes.
No. Was that real true life? Because I feel like I read that in a book. But it was a real thing, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And she was like storing one in her house, and then she had to burn it all. Yeah, quite a long time. Yeah. People were like kept complaining, and nothing was done.
Well, same with Larry. It's like, Larry, you've got one job here, love. You need to just deliver this post, and he's like,
It's like, now it's raining.
Nah, it's cold out.
What you should have done though, you should have paid all this like. Teenage kids to do it.
Yeah, got them out.
Yeah, because I doubt they were going to school. Do you know what I mean?
Do his job for him.
Yeah.
Larry was in and out of work, not successful. So there was never any money. And when there was money in the household, Larry was spending it on drink and gambling. So neighbours recall the girls calling round to their houses asking for food because they were hungry. It was just not a happy home. The couple apparently found religion. Here we go.
Okay.
And joined
not religion, guys. It's, you know.
Oh, don't knock religion. I knock the people that find it and use it as an excuse to do stuff. But we'll see. I don't know what's going to happen yet. I don't know what's going to happen yet, so I reserve judgment. Go for it, Cara.
I'm all for believing in God and religion, but this religion was, I think it was just an excuse to be a sexual deviant because they had this church they joined, had some strange practices such as carrying out exorcisms. Right. And on one occasion, Larry took 5-year-old Melinda to a hotel room and left her with this 50-year-old man for 5 hours.
My dad got paid for that.
Well, Melinda was drugged, so she doesn't remember anything about it. But I mean, come on, it's a genius to work out what he was up to.
He would have done that for money, though. It was probably to do with the church, but he would have got like money for it.
I don't know, because sometimes if it's like the church elders, it's sort of like. You sort of not sacrifice like to kill them, but sacrifice your daughter for a night with this random guy so you can be part of their whatever it is called, the part of their, not just the religion, but part of that sort of church specifically.
We've got a cult quantum and they keep asking Luke to join.
Really?
Luke's my nephew.
Genuinely.
It is cult. A leaflet through and it was like, join our community, we're all one together. They've got like, it's like four sides, it's like a little booklet.
Maybe Luke should go.
Well, that's what I said.
See what it's about.
That's what I said. I said, just go, but then what if you can't get back out?
Well, yeah, true.
Do you know what I mean? You don't know what you're going into. No. And he's like, we share our money.
Oh, God.
Okay. We all work as well. Children do not go to school.
Oh,
we keep our children. Say, I ain't got no money. Like, can I please share yours?
Yeah, that's what we would do, though.
not convinced on that one. All these religions, they all love money, don't they, somewhere along the line? They all love money.
Yeah.
But yeah, Larry, he became a marriage counsellor at one point when he was within this church, but he did have a bit of a reputation for being a bit creepy and a bit too forward with the women parishioners. And he actually attempted to rape one on one occasion. So
that doesn't surprise me at all, going from what you said so far. That does not. The fact that they'd even let him be a marriage counsellor and he's got a wife that's committing suicide because she can't bear the life with him. What a bloody to do.
Yeah, so him and Marjorie were asked to leave at that point, so they left and returned to their old lives. Mm. Tiny bit more. One point, Larry beat Marjorie so badly she was hospitalised and he was convicted of battery. Another occasion, she attacked him with a knife because she caught him spying on Melinda and a friend getting undressed. Basically, I'm just painting a picture of not a great house.
That Marjorie was protective of the girls or jealous of?
No, I think she was as hopeless as they were. Helpless. I think helpless. She was a bit.
Yeah.
I mean, she was trying to get out the only way she knew how, which was to, well, take her own life.
Yeah, either fight her way out or do it through death. Yeah.
He just sounds very violent, and you know, nothing's off the table, is it? Violent, no. Rape, just acting like a weirdo. It's just nothing. He's got no redeeming features. Can't keep a job. He's got no redeeming features.
Yeah.
The couple did eventually divorce, hallelujah, probably for the best. And Larry moved away to Florida where he remarried. He did initially keep contact with Melinda, but this eventually fizzled out until he severed all contact with her, which you might think, oh, that's a good thing for her and the family. But apparently Melinda took it very badly. And
I think any kid does, though, don't they? Abused or not abused. Like, for your parent to just walk away, it's more than abuse. I think more abused children than not.
Yeah, it depends. Like, I think we said in one of the last episodes, didn't I? It's like, it's the love that you're shown. It's the love that you know. It's all you've ever
known.
And
you're so codependent on them. And he probably taught, like, they were told what to feel, what to think, what to do. And then once he's gone, it's like, shit, what do we do? Mm. Do you know what I mean? Yeah.
And also, it is a form of attention, isn't it? Even though it's awful, it is a kind of attention. Maybe, I don't know, when you're that desperate, maybe you'll take anything.
Yeah.
Yeah, and when you are abused as a child, any attention is, well, no, not any attention is good attention, but I think you don't know how you should be feeling. So you like test the waters, and depending on what the mood is in the house is how you'll be. And I imagine when he was a present nice dad, he was probably overly nice.
Yeah.
And then when he was awful, he was probably overly awful. But
when he wanted something out of them, he could be quite attentive and whatnot. Yeah.
Sad, really, isn't it?
Really.
It is. And it kind of, when we see what goes on later, it is definitely mitigating factors. Although I often think, especially with true crime, when you listen to it a lot like I do, shitty things do happen to a lot of people, and we don't all go out and commit murder. It's there is something in someone, I think, that
My friend, she's so clever, and they can test you. It's something to do in your brain, and like a lot of serial killers have this like genetic form in their brain.
Really?
But they can't just test everybody because it'd be really expensive to do. But yeah, as they're testing like more serial killers' brains and things like that, they're seeing that more of these people have got this genetic factor
it's
in
like
their
a
brain.
DNA thing or something,
really
isn't it? And your brains work differently. Like, I know through scans, a different part of the psychopath's brain would light up than it would if it was me or you getting scanned, being shown, like, I don't know, pictures of poverty or rape or stuff like that. We'd be like shocked and horrified, where different parts of their brain light up and stuff. So yeah, it's really interesting when you think of it like from that point of view.
Yeah,
but even so, not all psychopaths and that kill people.
No. But do they want to?
Perhaps they do, but they don't all,
because you'll find like a lot of people will build up to it. Like in this case, this case here, I think a lot of it was because there were so many of them, it was sort of like a pack mentality where, because nobody said stopped, it just escalated. But I think like if you're on your own and you're a psychopath, you have to have the you have to have the right situation to be able to kill somebody. Mm. And do you know what I mean? If you can't,
I guess if you want to, though, you're going to make the right situation, aren't you?
Depends if you're socially awkward and stuff.
Mm. Yeah,
I'll get someone back to my house and kill them, but actually getting someone back to your house might be a lot harder than what you think.
Yeah, probably not these days, but yeah.
Well, no, probably not these days. You put an ad out.
Yeah. That's all really interesting stuff, and it actually comes into play in a bit, and you'll see. Because like what Bryony just said about the pack mentality, you think, why didn't somebody just put the hand up or say, hang on a minute, this is wrong, or you know, somebody had the balls to say it. But we'll cover that in a minute. So that's Melinda's home life. She was insanely jealous of Heverin and Shanna's blossoming romance. She tried to try and get Shanda on side. So there's some notes where she's like threatening her, I'm going to kill you, keep away from Amanda, threatening violence. And then she tries a different tact, and she tries to befriend her and be nice to her, because she probably thinks, if I can get Shanda to be my friend, then she'll stay away from Amanda because she'll like me and want to do what I say. So she tries all these different tacts, but nope, Shanda and Amanda keep on their relationship, keep writing notes to each other, and it's just blossoming. Melinda makes no secret of the fact that she hates Shanda, and she does publicly threaten to kill her on many occasions. I know kids at that age, so they're going to kill people, and not a lot of people take a lot of notice, but
then if somebody turns up dead, who's the first person you're going to look at, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. At this point, Shanda's grades are starting to drop and her school performance is starting to dip. She actually fails her like best class, which is physical education, which is a big red flag, and her parents are really concerned about this relationship she's got going on with Amanda, because she's older. And I'm not saying it had anything against that being a lesbian relationship, but there may have been a concern there. It doesn't say. So they move it to
early 90s. It wasn't as accepted as it is now, was it?
No, I don't. I can't really remember any kind of same sex relationships at school. And I'm a 90s chick. I can't really remember.
You don't even know what they are, do you?
Early 90s, you're just sort of coming off. I mean, I know this is two women, but I'm just thinking gay in general. You're just coming off the sort of AIDS epidemic and everything, aren't you? It was quite still like, ooh, gross, gay, ugh. It wasn't
Yeah, there was definitely a bit of that. But anyway, they moved to a different school.
There was as well, because if you were different in school, you didn't want to be different at school.
No.
You were a lesbian. Like, think of all the people that we assumed were lesbians in school. And a lot of them were like goths and stuff, you just assume. Mm. Or were just all ours lesbian. I don't know. Hope you don't listen to this. Do you know what I mean? If you think about some of them at school, the ones that were, or what that you assumed were like all like gothy type sort of like bit different.
And the ones that weren't came out later in life, because they, I guess they just wanted to be accepted in school. Looking at it now from my son's school to where, like, when we went to school, you did have the odd person say they were gay, or there were rumors that they might be. But in my son's school, everyone's gay. I think even if you're not gay, just say you are. It's just like, we can be whatever we want, and it's just out there and open. And
I don't know. In my daughter's school, they're everything. Do you know, there's a thing, like a cat. You can be there's a school, or is it St. Jude's at a college?
Yeah.
And it's like, you can pretend, is it like a cat? Or
there
was
something,
cat?
Somebody was, wasn't it?
When
was
you pretend to be
a furry.
Is that what it's called, a
yeah,
furry?
Yeah, you can be a furry.
And then you don't pretend, obviously, because that'd be, you'd be pretending.
You're not pretending, you are
like a dog or a cat. Or if you want to be an elephant, are you a fairy? Because they're not fairy.
I think it's under fairy.
Or if it's a chicken or something.
Yeah. That's a berry.
A feathery.
Yeah, feathery.
A feathery. No, none of that was a thing in the 90s, trust me. What, you go,
can you imagine if you went to school and was like, I'm a fairy? I'd be like, what the fuck? Get out of school.
But I don't know if the parents were concerned, but they moved her from the school. This didn't stop the relationship. They still carried on seeing each other, but as far as the parents were concerned, they'd sorted it.
So they didn't move far away, they just moved school?
No, just moved to a different school, same area, still lived in the same area, just a different school. So I guess they could still see each other.
And they all drive in America, so it's not like being that 16. Like far away. Yeah, it's not like being that far away is going to like cause you to
screw things up.
Yeah, exactly. It's not, what are you looking for? Your drinks, it's not there.
Yeah, it's here.
Oh, it's not there. You can drive, so it's like, do you know what I mean? Whereas me and you had to walk like 20 minutes.
Yeah,
if I'd have moved to the other side of Exeter,
I'd never seen you again.
No, it'd be gone. Like, never see you ever again.
And in the 90s, with no social media, you'd have been dead to her.
Yeah, you would have been. I told her before, a week, and I'd forget about her anyway, so you know.
Yeah, I've heard that.
When I was younger, it took me 3 days.
Yeah. But the phone bill, you used to pay for, not pay as you go, did you? It was, we had, I don't know, it was Eurobell or something when we were younger, and after Eurobell. 6 o'clock it was free.
That was probably, it's probably free in America all the time because God they're knows. well ahead of us.
Anywho, yeah, we all know you're not gonna miss me if I'm not in your face. If I don't message you, yeah, you'll forget about me.
Well, I can't ring you, you can't hear me.
No, I can't. Get better signal. I feel like you need to pay for better signal. Sure, but you decided to live in the middle of fucking nowhere.
I was in Exeter when you rang me.
Well, I don't know what to tell you. Sorry, Cara.
No, I love the tangents. So, Melinda's vendetta against Chandler continued. It was well known, well publicised. She often told anyone who was willing to listen that she's planning to murder Chandler. And she confided in one of her friends, Mary Lorraine Tackett, who was 17 years old and was known as Laurie. This is the second perpetrator. So just a little bit about Laurie. She lived with her mother and father. Her father was a factory worker and her mother was a fundamentalist Pentecostal Christian. Fundamentalist Pentecostal Christian.
What do we know what that is? As opposed it's a to Christian, a okay? Christian? Is
that... I think it's a very strict Christian, I think.
Right, it's a very devout.
She had some very strange and strict views. Just one example, she had a thing about Laurie wearing a skirt to school or something. And Laurie did that classic thing that we all used to do, packed her jeans in a bag, got to school, took the skirt off, whipped the jeans on.
Yeah.
The mum found out about this and she attempted to strangle her. So, yeah, she was a little bit dramatic and extreme.
Yeah.
But to be fair, I do that to my kid. Now I'm like, to my daughter, I'm like, you need to roll your skirt down. She's like, what? I'm like, I can see your ass. You cannot go to school like that. Like, and then they all wander around school and stuff like that. How is this even going on?
I ask it, it's how you know you're getting old because I look at, like, I live right by the school. So when they all come out of school, I can
see it. I'd stop now.
No, but when I go down, I'm like, Christ, these kids all look like they're grown-ups. And I'm like, are they, or am I just getting old?
Yeah,
like,
getting old.
I think I'm just getting old now.
And everyone would have been wound their ass out. I mean, roll your skirt down.
Yeah. But you girls never roll your skirts up. God, we used to do that.
Not as far as these girls. We didn't have, no, we were trouser era, weren't we? Yeah. Everyone, we never wore skirts. All of us were in trousers.
Three-quarter lengths.
Or like the really flared trousers, the flarier, the better.
Boot cut.
And like platform heels.
Yeah. The kickers.
And we had kickers, yes. But I had the platform.
I had the really chunky platform. Yeah, it was like,
why our parents let us go to school in those?
How the hell did we walk to school in them?
For health and safety hazard.
I used to love mine, were really good because they were like light kickers, like the front was light kickers, like the rounded bit. Yeah. They're really chunky. Really they're my favourite. I'd love some of them now.
You had a bright green Nike backpack as well.
Did I?
Yeah, it was fucking lime green. It was gross. But I always knew it was you because I could see the fucking backpack.
I don't remember that. A lime green.
It was lime green. It had a big night tick on it.
Oh, I was
think
cool
they used
then,
to do
though.
It in bright orange as well. There'll be somebody listening to this being like, I have one of
those. I was cool then. And then I got a puffer coat. I was like, fucking hell, I've made it.
They came back in last year.
Oh, I've got one. And it's really long. It's like down to my ankles. I love it. It's like dry robe. And you know what I'm like? I'm always cold.
You are always cold.
Just breathe. Right, sorry. We'll
get
carry
off our
on.
Granny rant. Okay, young stuff, yeah.
So, yeah, Laurie's mum, she's a bit extreme, so attempted to strangle her because she wore jeans. And she was molested at least twice as a child. There's not a lot of proof behind that, but that's what she claims. She's a bit of an odd character, Laurie. She claims that she's possessed by a spirit. She reads runestones. She talks in tongues sometimes. So she's got a little bit of the occult going on in her own mind.
Some of that influence was her mum as well. Maybe not different religions, but it's very strict. It can be sort of,
know,
I'm not saying she was following that religion, but maybe an influence from it.
And sometimes when you've got a parent who's so strict and so one way, the kids can go the opposite, don't they? They're like, right, they're rebellious.
And cults were in then. It was massive then.
Ouija boards and all that.
Yeah, like it was in, like, you were like the devil worshipper.
Oh yeah, that's when The Craft came out, and that wasn't
The Craft, yeah.
And we used to do Ouija boards.
Oh yeah, I don't know. I mean, we just used to draw it on a piece of paper, didn't we, and sit in your garage with a blow up doll. Why the hell did we have a blow-up doll? That was my brother's. That sounds weird, wasn't it? But we had, in my garage, we had like a pool table and stuff.
Why did my mum let him have a blow-up doll down there, though? Wonder what he did with it.
Oh my God, I dread to think I touched that bloody thing as well.
So, yeah, Laurie's got a few things going on mentally. She did, she was into self-harm. On one occasion, she cut her wrist so deeply, she was hospitalised. And then admitted to a psychiatric ward afterwards, where she was diagnosed with borderline personality disorder. She dropped out of school in 1991, and that's when she became friends with Melinda. I don't think Laurie was actually doing anything productive at this time. I don't think she was in school. I don't think she was working. I think she was just kind of a loose end, kind of hanging around. On the night Melinda planned to kill Shanda, which was January the 10th, 1992, she'd asked Laurie to pick her up from her house in her car. Also in Laurie's car at the time were two of her friends, Hope Rippey, who was 15 years old. She was also 15 years old. These two had never met Melinda before. They were Laurie's friends, but they never met Melinda, and none of them, apart from Melinda, knew Shanda. It was only Melinda. The other three don't know her at all. Quick word on Hope and Tony. They haven't got the dramatic backgrounds that Melinda and Laurie have got. It just says that Hope had a bit of history of self-harm, not much. Tony had a bit of history of being abused by a relative. And also there was an incident where she was raped by a local boy when she was 14 years old. And so she too had a history.
To a degree of some kind, isn't there?
She had a history of self-harm and attempted suicide in eighth grade. So, yeah, you've got four really troubled young ladies here, haven't we, really? Mm. And then you think the universe conspires and they all come together and it's a disaster, isn't it?
Yeah.
So that night, they were at Melinda's house. Melinda showed them all a knife she had and said she was going to use it to scare Shanda. Mm. So they set off in Laurie's car with Hope driving to Shanda's dad's house where she was staying that weekend. Once they arrived, Melinda instructed Hope and Tony to go and knock on the door and say that they were friends of Amanda Heverin, and Amanda had asked them to come and get her and take her to meet Heverin at a old house nearby where local teens used to hang out. There was no point Melinda going to the door because Shanda and her weren't, you know, she wouldn't go with Melinda because she knew Melinda wanted to beat her up and hurt her. So yeah. That's why she tried to send Hope and Tony.
Yeah.
They were not actually opened by Shanda, and Hope and Tony asked, is Shanda home? Because they didn't know Shanda. So that was, I think, so straight away it was a bit odd. She said she was busy at the moment, but could they return around midnight and she'd try and sneak out then? They returned to the car. Melinda was angry that they hadn't managed to get her back to the car, but Hope suggested they go to a local punk rock show, it says, to pass the time and then come back later. So that's what they did. 12:30 a.m. They'd been to this punk rock show and then they returned back to Shanda's house. This time, Tony refused.
Where were the parents at this time? Do we know?
I think when they went back, she'd like whispered it, come back at midnight. They'd probably gone around to a wind. I don't know. She made plans.
Done it sneakily somehow.
Yeah, sneakily. Yeah, I don't think that. Well, the dad definitely didn't know about it because he reports her missing the next morning, so he doesn't know she's gone out.
Right.
But this time, Tony refused to go to the door, so Hope and Laurie went up instead. Melinda crouched under a blanket on the back seat in the car. So, because obviously, the minute Shanda sees her, she's not going to get in the car.
Yeah, she can be like, fuck that shit, yeah.
Yeah, I'm off. Initially, she was reluctant to go with Hope and Laurie, but she did eventually agree, and she got into the car. As the car drove off, Melinda jumped out from under the basket, blanket where she'd been hiding, and put the knife to Shanda's throat.
Jesus. I wonder what they did to her to get her in the car.
Well, they told her Amanda was waiting for her, didn't they?
Yeah.
That's why they were using Amanda as bait. So she screamed. She was terrified, obviously. On the car journey, Melinda was asking her relentless questions about her relationship with Amanda Heverin, like interrogating her, demanding this, that and the other, just kind of almost bullying and interrogating her all the way to the witch's castle, which is it's an abandoned house, which apparently is where local teens go to hang out. That's what it's... I think we all know places like that in our local areas, don't we? It was when they got here, they bound Chanda's arms and legs with rope. Melinda removed her rings and handed them out as like little presents to the others. And Hope took Chanda's Mickey Mouse watch. Do you remember those watches in the 90s with the hands?
With his hands. Yeah.
I never had one. I bet you had one of those.
I did have one.
But just goes, you know, she's 12, isn't she? You think, oh God, she's got a Mickey Mouse watch. And handing out all her trinkets like trophies.
Yeah.
Laurie grabbed a T-shirt from the back of the car, set it on fire. So just threatening Chanda. And all the time, I think they're just berating her and interrogating her about Amanda, even though Laurie, Hope and Tony don't know Chanda.
Mm.
They bundled her
back. I imagine at this point, Chanda is really thinking, oh God, they're going to kill me.
I don't know.
I didn't think she was, though. I didn't believe she was. No. I think she's probably scared to get beat up. But do you really think that, like, she hasn't actually done anything wrong?
Yeah, but I don't, if somebody took me at knife point and then started like interrogating me and beating me up and that, I'd be thinking I'm going to die.
I wouldn't. See. Yeah, you probably would. Yeah. Yeah. If I took you in my car now and just took you to the woods, you'd
think
you were going to die.
I think I'm going to die.
Yeah. You know what I mean? But yeah, I can. And no, I don't think she did. I think she just thought.
I don't think so either, because I can remember older girls at my school and I was scared stiff of them. And, you'd think, oh, God, they're really hard or whatever. But I wouldn't have thought they would kill, maybe beating up, but kill and knives, and that crosses into a whole new realm then, doesn't it? So at this point, all they're doing is like shouting and berating. They've tied her hands and legs together. But, you know, at this point, somebody could have flagged it up and said, hang on, let's stop now, but nothing.
Yeah.
They bundled her back into the car, drove around with us for some time, still threatening her. Chanda's all the time begging to be taken home. Laurie then drove them to an abandoned building not far off the main road. Here, Hope and Tony claimed to be frightened, so they stayed in the car while Laurie and Melinda made Chanda strip down to her underwear. So they're now humiliating her, embarrassing her, whatever you want to say. And then I think like it was like a switch clicked, because they then launched in violence against her, with Melinda beating her with her fists and slamming her head into her knee repeatedly. She then tried to cut Chanda's throat with the knife, but it was too dull. So instead, Laurie and Melinda took it in turns to stab the knife into Chanda's chest. They also strangled her with the rope until she was unconscious. So they've crossed the line now, haven't they? This has now gone from like a bit of teenage bullying to...
Yeah, this is sort of masochistic, isn't it? It's awful.
Yeah.
And they didn't even know it. You've got to think, they didn't even actually know this girl.
Like you said, that sort of pack mentality. I think it probably helped that the two girls were quite a bit younger.
Maybe.
Yeah, Tony and Hope are still in the car at this point. They refused to get out. But Laurie doesn't know Chanda, and she's out there taking it in turns to stab her with Melinda.
Is she the same age? Sorry.
She's 17.
Oh, sorry. I thought she was 15.
No, Tony and Hope are 15. Melinda and Laurie are 16 and 17. So a little bit older, but at that age, that is a big difference, isn't it? From 15 to 17, it's almost like child to adult, isn't it? Almost.
Yeah, it does feel a lot bigger, doesn't it? When you're younger.
Yeah. So she's unconscious now. They pop her back into the trunk and told Hope and Tony that she was dead. They drove to Laurie's house and went inside to have a drink and get cleaned up. While they were doing this, they heard screaming coming from outside in the trunk. So Laurie grabbed a paring knife from out the kitchen and went out and just stabbed Chanda several more times. At 2:30 a.m., Laurie and Melinda wanted to go back out driving. Chanda still in the boot. They left Tony and Hope behind. They said they were tired and they weren't going, so they stayed behind.
Mm-hmm.
Laurie and Melinda, they drove around for hours. They went to various towns. They'd occasionally hear Chanda cry out or make gurgling noises. And when this happened, they would stop, open up the trunk, beat her a bit, and then carry on driving. And that went on for hours. They were doing that, just round and round.
Did they have a plan at this point, or is it just sort of
who knows
what they've been doing?
Who knows? I don't think they've got a plan, because if they had a plan, how are they thinking they're going to get away with this?
Yeah.
What's the plan here? There is no plan.
I don't think they were thinking about that.
And DNA wasn't big in the 90s.
I know it wasn't, but still, like to be stabbing and beating someone in your boot.
Oh, yeah.
some kind of evidence.
I don't think they even thought about that. I don't think it even crossed their mind in the slightest.
No.
And you wait to hear what they do. So maybe it did cross their mind eventually, or they thought, oh, we can try and get away with this and people might not think it was us. But like, I didn't think they thought about it. They were so young and I don't want to say naive, but I just think stupid.
And just caught up in the moment with.
Yeah.
Because Melinda has made it blatantly obvious to anyone who listened that she wants to kill Shanda. So she's, I don't think she's thinking about getting away with it. I think she just wants to kill her and that's her blind rage.
Yeah, that's it. It's what she sees.
There's no thoughts after that. She just wants her out of the way.
Yeah.
Yeah. On one of the occasions, this is just, I don't really know why I put this in, but it's just a bit of detail. Laurie beat her with a tire iron and commented that she felt Shanda's head cave in. And she then also, she also sexually abused tire iron. So, you know, it's... Yeah, and Laurie doesn't know Shanda. Laurie doesn't know her at all. It's the first night she's met her.
See, because I'm thinking, like, to begin with, I was thinking, was she sort of led into it? But going by some of the stuff you said she's done, I'm like, seems like she wanted to be part of it.
She's leading it as much as Melinda. At least, at least Melinda's got, in inverted commas, a reason or a motive behind, you know, she's got a personal grime. She didn't know her.
No, she's just a complete stranger.
Yeah. So these on-off beatings continued for several hours. They returned back to Laurie's house. Melinda and Laurie woke up and delighted in filling them in on what had happened with Shanda. Next morning, Laurie went to take the others home and she opened up the trunk to show them Shanda. Tony refused to look, but Hope, and again, it's another bit of detail, but Hope sprayed her with Windoline and taunted her that she didn't look too hot now. You're like, yeah, Hope, you weren't involved in this. You're quite happy to spray a viciously beaten 12-year-old, you know. They then all drove to a gas station. They bought a 2-litre bottle of Pepsi, tipped the Pepsi out and bought some gasoline, drove out to a deserted area. Laurie and Melinda wrapped Shanda in a blanket, carried her out and placed her on the ground. At this point, Shanda was still alive. She's been in there since like midnight.
Do you think how many times one of them could have stopped it and could have maybe saved her? Do you know what I mean? Like, they could have just dropped her off at a hospital now and fucked off. Like,
I wonder how alive she was though.
Yeah, but still, like,
she wasn't dead, was she? No, she was still breathing to some
and that's
capacity.
Gone on all night. Yeah. Like, she's been there all night. So, poor girl.
And I'm wondering. I know it doesn't really matter because she did die inevitably, but I'm wondering, were they trying to keep her alive and prolong it? Or did they
I think they kept thinking that they killed her, didn't they? And then they'd open the trunk and realize they hadn't. So they like beat her again and then think, oh, like when they strangled her and she was unconscious, I think, oh yeah, they thought she's dead. Like, do you know what I mean? If you slit someone's throat and strangle them, you're probably thinking,
stabbed them a couple of times.
In your head, you're thinking they're dead.
Cave underneath, you think, oh yeah. That's what I was wondering. Are they that just sort of stupid that they haven't realized they haven't killed her, or are they trying to keep her alive for sadistic reasons?
No, I think they're trying to kill her. And I, like Brani just said, they've already commented that they'd killed her once, didn't they, to Tony and Hope? Killed her, come look. But the coroner did say at this point she could have lived. It's what they do to her next that basically. So at this point she could have lived. So, but no, nobody stuck their hand up. Nobody thought.
I can't believe I've never heard this.
Yeah, I'm surprised you've never heard it. It's like, it has been covered by a lot of podcasts, but it hasn't been like not as many as you'd think. I don't think people like to cover it because it is a really
so horrific.
Sad
this
case.
Is a brand new case on me. I've never heard it.
Yeah, it's awful. So at this point, Laurie instructs Hope to pour some of the gasoline onto, and they set her alight. They drive away, leaving when Melinda suddenly fears that Shanda's not dead, so they return, and indeed she wasn't dead and she was writhing in agony. Melinda poured the rest of the gasoline on her and Shanda's final words were said to be "Mommy."
My biggest fears is drowning or burning. I cut like
I'm not being cremated. I'd rather be in a coffin and
I don't mind being cremated because I'm dead then, but
how do you know it doesn't hurt?
Because I'm dead.
You don't know that, though.
That's like, well, if you're getting buried and you're left on the
I'd rather be left in underground.
Worms and things.
Because if someone kills you as well, they can exhume your body in like a couple of years' time and figure it out.
Well, I'm hoping I'm going to die of natural causes.
You don't know that.
No, I'm beginning to wonder about you. You've got a bit of a journey in yourself.
When we're really rich, I'll kill you off and I'll get all of it then. Instead of 50%, I'll get 100%.
Yeah, you've heard it all here first, guys.
Yeah, maybe you not want to publicise that on a podcast. But...
Yeah. Definitely.
God, imagine if you do die now, you'll be first to be looked at, then they'll look at my phone. Shit.
I just can't get over what they did to this poor girl. And they're so young, like, where does this live? Like, oh, it's crazy.
I don't think if they all hadn't have been together, I don't think it would have ever happened.
It was just the perfect shit.
They all needed to be together for it to have happened. Yeah, the more of them that, and because no one said, like, I think if one of them would have said, oh, I don't know, like, let's stop now, I think they probably would have, because nobody said, and then it went on and on and on and on, and then the more they did, I think the more that she wasn't dying, they were like, why are you not dead yet,
and go past the point of
return.
Yeah, I think sometimes the universe just conspires, and you get two people of that same evil ilk come together. And you look at Myra Hindley and Ian Brady, Fred West, Rose West, Joanne Dennehy, and was he called Stretcher, the guy that she had doing all her dirty work? You know, these usually, like, somebody came to you and said, oh, do you fancy doing a murder? You turn around and say, no, I don't, thanks. And that's the end.
Who is it first?
Yeah, who is it first? Oh, then.
It's Sam, because I've already got a plan for that one.
I don't ruin my plan. But yeah, no, you would. You'd be
they
like.
They find each other, don't they?
Yeah, they do. And also, as well, I don't know if they find each other and then, or if there's always one that's worse than the other. You get some that are about the same.
Yeah, but I think usually there's one that's in charge more than the other. Normally, I wouldn't say forever or for always, but I think generally one's a bit.
And
more...
once you've done it, once you've lured somebody, you're then, especially in America, you're complicent. Then, if you've drove that car, that's it. Like, you get just as much time as somebody else. So it's like, oh, well, I'm going to get them the same amount of time anyway. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't know if Tony and Hope thought that. I don't know if they thought
I don't think. No, I don't think she understood. I didn't think she realised that.
No.
But they should have. They should have said. But were they scared? You know, you're looking out the car window at someone stabbing someone with a knife, and you think they're 16, 17. Yeah, you've got to be quite ballsy to say, hang on a minute, I think this is wrong, you know.
I said
it's twofold. Either they liked it and wanted to do it, or like you said, they were scared and were thinking, if I don't go along with this, I'm in shit.
Yeah, teenage girls' relationships are fascinating, I think, because
definitely,
it's way more complicated than boys, aren't they? There's that boys are simple creatures, aren't they?
I'd say it more so than girls. We're never going to know what it's like for a boy, because we're all women. But I think girls, just the bitchiness and the games played and stuff like that, you just don't see it with boys so much, do you?
No, calculating. Mm. So the four of them then went, as you do, they went off to McDonald's for breakfast, where Melinda made a comment about the sausages looking like Shanda's charred body. I know, they're the worst, aren't they? No remorse. Laurie dropped Tony and Hope home and then took Melinda back to her own home. They contacted Amanda Heverin to inform her what they had done. She wasn't sure whether to believe them or not, because she'd been hearing from Melinda forever that she was going to kill Shanda. Yeah. So she went round to Melinda's house and saw all the evidence in the back of her car. So the bloody handprints, discarded socks. She was naturally horrified and asked to be taken home straight away. Melinda dropped her home, kissed her and told her that she loved her and begged her not to tell anyone.
Jesus. She's not all there upstairs, is she? She's fucking mental. To show somebody, I killed the love of, you know, your girlfriend who you love, and look at what I've done. Did she think she was doing it for her and that she's going to turn around and go, oh, I love you now, let's be together?
Look what I've done for you.
Yeah.
this is how much you mean to me. But Amanda, I don't know why it doesn't, Amanda didn't flag this up with the police or anything, whether she still didn't quite believe her or I don't know. She definitely didn't flag it up with the police though.
What is it? Was she scared? Was there a part of her that wanted to protect her? Like,
I don't know.
This is what I mean. Know. Now we've got five people that all know about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And nobody said anything.
No.
So Shanda's body was discovered later that same morning on January the 11th, 1992. Who had gone out hunting for the day. They initially thought that Shanda's remains was a mannequin, but on closer inspection soon realised it was the burnt remains of a child. Shanda's body...
to come across something like that. I hope I never, ever have to be in that position. Just the trauma of finding someone like that must be so fucking awful.
Yeah, her body had been left in a sexually explicit way. I mean, this is another thing. With the tire iron and this, it's like they go beyond the violence and it verges into almost like sexual predator stuff, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Why have they left her in a sexually explicit way? Yeah. Why have they put they sodomized her?
I
with
think
the tire
for them, it's just to humiliate her more. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, it's just like, oh, look what else we can do.
Yeah.
Like, look how funny this is.
How sadistic we can be. Yeah.
Yeah. So the brothers immediately notified the state trooper, and an investigation began. Meanwhile, across in the other state, because they have all these little counties, don't they, in America, Shanda's father had realised Shanda was missing. After trying to find her by contacting her friends, he notified his ex-wife and together they filed a missing report. Back in the other state, Hope and Tony are having a crisis of conscience and they cannot handle what they've been confiding in their parents. And at 8:20 p.m., they crumble. At 8:20 p.m. that day, they were taken into the sheriff's office to give statements. They were described as hysterical and rambling. But yeah, they couldn't handle it. And they named the victim as Shanda because that's all they knew. They didn't know her. And then named the other two girls, Ginger and Laurie, who were involved. So from them doing that, the sheriff was then able to link the missing person report with the body they'd found. So using data records, they could confirm that it was Shanda Scherer, the victim.
Christ.
Thanks. And then I think they had to use dental records, didn't they? Mm.
They did. They had to use dental records.
Terrible.
They found smoke in her lungs in the autopsy, which indicates she was still alive when they burnt her. And she was also in what they call the boxer's pose or something. You know, when if you're burning, your arms go up like that into like a boxer's, you know, when they...
Yeah, like to protect the face sort of thing.
Yeah. So she was definitely still alive. So it's as far as guilt, it's a done and dusted case, isn't it, really? Because they've got statements and, like you say, the DNA, they were very sloppy, weren't they? Didn't try and hide it. They didn't try and cover it whatsoever.
I imagine the evidence was just astronomical.
Yep. Melinda and Laurie were both arrested on January 12th, so the next day. Tony and Hope's statements implicated both girls, and also Laurie's car was absolutely filled with forensic evidence, as we just said. Mm. All four girls were charged and were to be tried as adults. And the prosecution made it clear they were seeking the death penalty in regard to Laurie and Melinda. So to avoid this, all four girls accepted plea deals, which... I really don't like those plea deals they do in America. It's like, if you plead
guilty... They don't have to offer them to them. They don't have to offer them, though, do they?
No, I don't think they do, but it's kind of like, they use it as a bargaining chip, don't they? So, like, we'll take the death penalty off the table if you say you're guilty.
It's to ensure they do time, isn't it? Because I guess there's still a chance they could...
But fuck me, man.
But they've all got bad backgrounds. They're all young, so, they're... lawyers and that will sort of use that to their aid, won't they? So
true.
That's exactly what happened. It said throughout the trial, which started on 16th of March that same year, 92, the defence made a big thing of outlining their mitigating factors for all four girls, with their troubled home lives, histories of physical and sexual abuse. Laurie's got this borderline personality disorder, and all of them have suffered at some point from a mental health issue. But at the same time, this crime is so heinous in nature. The fact that Shanda was a child, and they've not just killed her, they've tortured her and they've mutilated her.
Yeah. And,
you know, over like, what would that be? 6-7 hours from they picked her up at midnight, went on all till the morning. And like, at any point, somebody could have said, no, well, let's stop. But no, they carried on.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, it's just, blow my mind. It's it's cruel. I don't even know what the word is. It's not even cruel, is it? That doesn't seem enough.
No, I don't remember the time, but then I would have been in my, I wouldn't, back then, unless you sought out news, it was now, was it, you know?
No, the, especially not if you're English and it's in America.
In America, but it says it was a really highly, well-publicised, emotive, all that stuff. It was on all the television stations. Because of its controversial nature, you've got four young girls, another girl. So sentencing, Tony was sentenced to a maximum of 20 years in exchange for her cooperation. She was released in December 2000 after serving 9 years. She was arguably the least culpable because she didn't actually physically get involved in any of the slaying, but her main crime was not speaking out or making any attempt to stop what was happening.
Yeah.
That's it. He was only 15. I don't know. Hope sentenced to 60 years with 10 years suspended for mitigating circumstances, but this was later reduced to 35 years when she appealed it in 2004. She was actually released in April 2006 after serving 14 years, which I think was really low, seeing as she did physically get involved in the slaying.
Yeah, that's nothing.
Yeah, she held her down, she sprayed the windoline on her, she poured the petrol on her.
Yeah.
Yeah, 14 years for that. But apparently,
it was the petrol that killed her. So
killed her. Yeah.
Christ.
Apparently, she found God. She found God in prison and left a reformed character. Apparently. So.
Right.
Melinda and Laurie. They were both sentenced to 60 years. Throughout the trial, they both blamed each other, as you would.
Mm-hmm.
In 1994, but their original sentences were upheld. In 2008, Melinda again appealed her sentence, but this too failed. Laurie was released in January 2018, which ironically, she was released on the 26th anniversary of Shanda's death.
Really?
Yeah, it was a bit sick, wasn't it? I could have chosen a date for that.
Other than, yeah.
And Melinda was released in September 2019 after serving 26 years, and she was 43 years old on her release.
See, because I mean, I know they're in their 40s and that, but they can still have a life. It just doesn't seem for the level of, it's not just, I mean, the murder is bad enough if it's on its own, but for what they did, I don't know, that doesn't seem enough.
And then you look at it and you think, well, maybe it is an argument for prison and reform, because none of them have gone on to reoffend.
And depends if they were good in prison for the whole time.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you put in there, but I think Shanda's mum like got really involved with them, and I'm sure they had some sort of like, you know, when like you train dogs. Have you put that in?
Yeah, Jackie Vore, who's Shanda's mum, she, while Melinda was in prison, she was enrolled on this ICAN program, which is the Indiana Canine Association Network program, which allows inmates to help train dogs for the disabled. And apparently Melinda was a natural at this and just excelled in it. So Shanda's mum watched her in action and was so taken with it that she actually donated a dog in Shanda's memory named Angel for Melinda to train. Yeah. She also set up a foundation in Shanda's name to provide a scholarship for two students every year to go to this technology school near where they lived. I've seen her on like Dr. Phil and stuff. She's quite a remarkable woman, the way she's so poised with it all. And
yeah. So did she sort of give her forgiveness then? Or?
If you believe in God, to go to heaven and see your loved one again, you have to forgive.
Mm.
That's what is in the Bible.
Mm.
So if you do, then a lot of, and Americans are a lot more religious than what we are here. So it's, I feel like it's ingrained in you that you have to forgive. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. So for me, I think that sentence is crap, but I'm looking at it from situations. If somebody did that to my kid, I would not want you seeing the light of day ever again.
Same.
However, if the mum was perfectly happy with them being released, then who are we to say any different?
The mum actually faced a lot of criticism for donating the dog and, you know, giving Melinda this.
It's criticism though. How can you, like, do you know what I mean? As a victim's parent, like, fucking hell.
And her reasoning was, like, if you don't allow something good to come of something so bad, nothing will ever get better. You know, it's just this complete cycle of hate going round and round. She just said that she just wanted them all to serve their time. And the only person who served their full sentence without appeal, I think it was Laurie, actually. Everyone else appealed it and got it reduced. So that was the only thing that she was upset about, she was saying, when I saw her on this interview. Because I saw her on this Dr. Phil episode where she sits across from Hope Rippey. They bring on Hope, and the mum and Shanda's sister are sat there and they talk to her. And it's, I mean, Hope just... What can you say? She just sits there.
I wouldn't have done it. There's no way I would have done
it. Try and remind me, Bri, if I can find some clips of that, I'll put it on YouTube.
Can't put anything of Dr. Phil on.
Oh, can we not?
No, you see your ass.
Oh, really?
I wouldn't bother. I just wouldn't bother.
I thought you were allowed to put clips on.
No. That's why it's really hard to find Dr. Phil stuff. You can find Dr. Phil stuff, but it won't be a full episode ever.
Oh, yeah, no, I wasn't like... going to put the full episode. I was just thinking the clip.
I mean, you do you, but you heard it right here. I'm telling you not to.
You're on your own if you get sued.
Yeah, so basically what I'm saying, okay, our insurance won't cover it.
Anyone wants to find it, but it's
she's
quite remarkable, that woman. And unfortunately, Shanda's father, Stephen Scherer, he didn't fare quite as well, and he died of alcoholism in 2005 at the age of 53. Shanda's mum said he did everything he could to kill himself, bar put the gun to his own head, as he died from a broken heart. So that's really sad. He just never got over.
How can you get over that, really? Because it's not like your child's just got like that and it been in a freak accident. Do you know what I mean? Like, she really did suffer, and there were so many opportunities when she didn't have to die. And what did she die for, realistically? What was, like, there wasn't actually any reason.
No, she was just having a relationship with somebody that somebody else loved.
Yeah.
And like, the next year or what, next month, she could have liked somebody else.
Exactly.
But yeah, they're all out and about living in the communities now. It just says things like Tony's married with children. She works for a trucking company. She keeps a low profile. Hope has reportedly married her girlfriend, still lives in Indiana. Not much is known about Laurie, other than that she still resides in Indiana. And Melinda has since changed her name and keeps a low profile, staying out of the public eye. There's been a film made about it, books, play, poem, and a series of art, even done by some American artist, by Marlene McCarthy. But yeah, there's a lot out there. But I don't know, it's got to say something for prison, because none of them have reoffended. And like you said, I couldn't get over what they've done. Even they've served their time, whatever, but I just couldn't get over it. But they obviously are getting on with their lives now and keeping out of trouble.
Yeah, I mean, there is something to be said, you know, if they are living a better life. I guess they were young. I mean, I know I'm not the person I was when I was 15, but then also I didn't go killing people. So it's, you know, I don't know.
I'm not going to say what I did when I was 15. No. Just keep it quiet.
I think from a mother's point of view, if somebody did that to my child, I just don't think I could find it in me to forgive them. I really don't.
No, it is remarkable. If you get a chance, just watch it on, just Google Dr. Phil Shanda Scherer and you'll come up. She's so great, you know, the amount of grace she has as well. And you know, you just want to jump over and kill them, wouldn't you? But she's a better woman than me.
Actually, sit in a room with one or two of them like that.
Yeah, her mum, to be fair to her mum, like, I don't think I would be able to do it. Never say never, because you don't know.
No, you don't know.
And to hate somebody takes up so much of your time and energy.
Oh, it does, for sure.
But I mean, I can't say there's anyone I hate in this world, but then I haven't lost a child, so you know. And even if it was a freak accident, I would probably still hate the person that did it.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean?
Even if it was an accident, yeah, if somebody caused it.
Not saying I would like go after them, but I would, do you know what I mean,
forever
feel
a certain way towards them.
Yeah. So it's like, you know, it's a difficult one.
Yeah, I mean, what a woman. I mean, you know, I'd love to say I'm pure to the bone, but I'm not. I just don't think I could forgive. But yeah, like you said, hopefully, touch bloody all the wood in the world, we'd never have to be in that situation. What an awful thing.
Yeah, it's awful. It was one of the first cases I ever came across in true crime. I just found it really interesting, but that is the case of Shanda Scherer. So There's that loads of information.
Absolutely wow. Fucking crazy case, Cara. And thank you for telling it, because I genuinely not one I've ever come across before. And you did it really well.
You did.
Ah, not as good as you said. But
well, we didn't have to pause you once.
No, we didn't. We pause all the time for ourselves.
We pause all the time for ourselves because we can't read off paper. And I can't get my tablet to take off this weird predictive text. So I don't know what it says. It's not even what I've written. I didn't even write that.
No, you've done really, really well, Cara. That was so interesting. And you told it in a way that kept us sort of engaged. So well done to you. That was really, really interesting.
What's your next case going to be?
there's quite a few cases. I don't know. It's weird how certain cases pique your interest, isn't it?
Yeah,
you start googling the images or finding out where they are now or what they're doing.
Yeah, do you know what one I'm really interested in at the moment? West Memphis 3. I'm going to cover it.
All right.
And I'm like, I've sort of like in my head, I've started it, mm-hmm. but so much, because I thought I'm going to go right back to the beginning. I've watched like half of the Paradise Lost, like the first one, watched half of it, and then never watched it again. And I thought no, and I sat down the other night and I watched all of it, and I was like, oh my god, I can't wait to watch the second one. Then I thought, right, I'm going to start writing bits out. Like, there's so much. Do you know anything about the West Memphis 3?
I've watched something on them, but I can't think for the life of me. This is my problem. I don't remember.
I think you'd remember certain names. So, like, if I said to you someone called Damien Eccles, I reckon.
Yeah.
If I said to you the children's names, I don't think you would know anything about them.
I don't know. Damien Eccles rings a bell there.
Yeah, that would ring a bell. That's the sad thing about it. Well, no, because they're all victims in my case. So that's my view. And I'm going to really try and do it about any of my views. I'm just going to stick to the facts, because there's so many theories of who could have done it. I thought no, I'm just going to stick to the whole facts. And there's someone that's wrote a book on it, and I need to know. It was what was his name, the guy that had the disability. I should know their names, because I have been Jason Baldwin was the other one. People are like, fucking hell, you idiot. Anyway, Jason, hold on, I've got to Google it. Just carry on talking about something else. Fucking hell, piss me off.
I don't really know that case. I'll be interested.
What?
No. Is it a miscarriage of justice one?
Yes. Like, yeah. Oh my god, it'll blow your mind, because it's like, basically, you've got three boys that were killed. Young boys, 8-year-old boys that were killed, and they were killed. They were like hogtied and stuff, and like they're like one of the boys' penises, like skin was removed.
I've definitely
really
heard
awful.
Of this one. I definitely.
And then you've got three teenagers that were convicted of it, and they served, I think, like 18 years. One of them was on death row, and then they came out and they did an Alpha plea, which basically means we're saying we've done it, but we're going to get out. And they all had to sign this Alfred plea to get out. So even though they wanted to, even though they were going, some of them were going back to court, but they got it on because one of them, which is the guy I'm trying to find the name of, he basically has got a learning disability, and the police got him to admit to Jason Miskelly. Damien Eccles was friends with Jason Baldwin. Jason Baldwin was friends with Jesse Miskelly.
Right.
So, but that Jesse Miskelly didn't really know that Damien Eccles. And he was a bit of an odd boy in the 90s, wore black in a very, very, very religious town.
Right.
So it's all to do with like the occult. And they thought it was to do with the occult. And the police, if you go and read or we go and listen to the court transcripts of his confession, they're like, he's like saying, oh yeah, we killed them at like 3 p.m. and they're like, well, these boys were at school. And they're like, are you sure it's 3 or was it 4 or was it 5? And he's like, no, like 4 or 5. They're like, was it 5 or was it 6? And he's like, 6. yeah, and they're doing it, and it's all like, you can listen to it all. It's like, what the fuck, how did this even happen? And then he was only supposed to be there to name Damien Eccles. And he ends up implicating himself by saying one of the boys ran off and he went back to get him. So now they're like, well, because you went back to get him,
you're in it.
You're in it. Yeah, you're in it. And it's like, how they didn't get off is crazy. But like, and then Paradise Lost focuses on the trial of them three first. Mm. Then it focuses on people turning and thinking actually maybe it wasn't him, it was one of the fathers.
Right.
And then, because he's just crazy, one of the fathers, like absolutely batshit crazy. And then sort of now everyone's like, oh, his timeline is so tight that it's been really difficult for him to do it, because the boys were last seen at like, say, 6 o'clock and they were reported missing at like 8. So it's in like a 2-hour time gap. And it's like, so everyone's got this 2-hour time gap, everyone's got to be accounted for. But all the parents were accounted for.
So it couldn't have been there.
Can't say it definitely wasn't, but it would have been very, very hard for it to have been one of the parents. And it's like, you've got three kids, so you've got six people. Do you know what I mean? It's really interesting. It's really, really crazy. And then there's the police were called because it's like a Bojangles like restaurant, and they phoned the police and was like, someone's walked in here covered in blood. And the police were like, yeah, don't worry about it. And then they obviously realized these three boys are missing, no one can find them. But where they were in this woods, the police, no one wanted to go in there and search because like the mosquitoes were really bad. Oh, it's a crazy case, honestly. Start googling it, you go down a rabbit hole. I'm surprised if you listen to true crime you haven't listened to any cases on it.
Yeah, I'm not gonna look into it.
Don't look into it. Yeah, it is a massively, it's gonna be, it's, we're gonna have to do like 5 or 6 parts on it though.
Really?
Yes, yeah, really. Yes, yeah, so much because so much has happened. There's two trials, but there's three people involved in those trials. But there's also, you've got to look at all the parents' timelines, then you've got to look at them, then you've got to look at the years they were in prison, then you've got to look at, and then the DNA, their DNA from obviously the bikes and stuff from the crime scene and shoelaces that were tied with. And apparently it was, I thought it was, it got burnt in, like the police cell got, like the police quarters got caught on fire, and it was burnt. And then there was a flood. So I thought they lost it. And then I recently found out that actually they've got all this DNA. It wasn't lost anyway.
Mm.
I was like, what the fuck?
That might be a good case to do then, because I'm bloody busy with college shit at the moment. So do that.
So just carry on doing that.
Yeah.
It's going to be really difficult to do.
Yeah.
And I'm also really interested in the P. Diddy situation.
I know. I'm following that.
Me too.
It's a bit crazy, isn't it?
Yeah. Are you following this, Cara?
Yeah. I watched the documentary on it.
I didn't even know there was one until today. Like, how did I not know there's a documentary?
I haven't seen it, but I know there was one.
And, I didn't know that. But it can't cover much, though, because his lawsuits have only not long apart. Like, they're only like 3 years old, aren't they?
Oh, hang on. I'm thinking of R. Kelly.
Yeah, no, it's not a documentary. Really. Probably in the same group, though.
Yeah.
Probably in
there's
the same
group. There's so much going on with them, isn't there? I think a lot more is going to come out.
So Sean, what was his name? Paul Sean.
Sean Combs.
Something. Sean Cohen's. King, Cohen. P. Diddy. Puffy, yeah.
I'm sure it's Sean Cohen's.
Cohen's. You're right. I don't know who I'm thinking of. Sean.
I don't know.
Someone else.
Sean Paul.
Sean Paul, probably. Yeah. He's probably in it as well. He's probably in the club.
Sean Paul.
I would have to have gone to one of those parties.
But it's throwing shade on a lot of people, isn't it? Like Jay-Z and even Jennifer Lopez, and that's coming under fire a little bit now. So I think there's going to be some names. Who is it? There's a woman, Jaguar something.
Yeah, she's like spouting her mouth off everywhere.
Yeah,
isn't she?
And she has been for years and nobody was listening
there's
to her.
There's another guy as well, some guy that's been spouting his mouth off.
What's he called?
I don't know.
I can literally see his face. I can't think of his bloody name.
I don't know.
No, I can't think of his name. But yeah, well, they're both saying the same thing.
And now the girl that had the lawsuit originally against him, the first is like the one that he was with for like years and years and years. She's now cooperating with the police.
Yeah.
So there obviously is definitely something in it.
Yeah.
Otherwise, because she could just be like, plead the fifth, I want to do it.
Yeah.
Because she's already been settled. So she's not going to gain anything.
Yeah.
Like by cooperating with the police.
Yeah, I reckon there's going to be a lot to come out with this. A lot.
But the guy that like come out and like started this massive thing, whatever it is, what's his name? Little John,
little something.
He's got loads of videos.
Yeah.
Loads of videos. So, yeah. And there was some guy as well, some guy that was arrested in 2018, right? And it's like, I listened to this police interview and he's spouting all this off to the interviewers. He's like, yeah, I was an escort and I used to have sex parties with him and I used to be his sex slave and all this stuff. And the police are like, ah, we've not even arrested you for that. Like, what the fuck are you banging on about? And they're like, do you know Puff Daddy? And they're like, yeah. And he's like, yeah, that's who I'm talking about. And they're like, ah, So anyway, we're actually like, let's get to the point of what we arrested you for. It's like, and this was in 2018, this interview. So it was like, you've got so much evidence.
It's been out there. It has been out there.
Absolutely. Oh, it's crazy.
I can't find any names of any people. It's just going on about him. But yeah, I don't know. He was supposed to be in some sort of relationship with some preacher guy that wasn't, you know, it was a bit sadistic or, oh, so many things.
Oh, I'm excited.
Yeah.
I'll look out for the West Memphis 3 or P. Diddy.
Yeah. I tell you what, there's a channel that I done a lot of research on when we were doing the Johnny Depp case, and they're covering a lot to do with the P. Diddy. So that's, what the hell are they called? Popcorn Planet. And they do a lot of research, and they talk to like lawyers and all different people. So sometimes it's a bit dribbly, like, you know, you got to fast forward through a few bits because it gets a bit.
Oh, I love the dribbly bits.
I do too, but just for people that don't. But they do their research. They are quite good.
I'm more interested in the, like I just think poor Justin Bieber. He was so young and innocent, and he ruined him. Yeah. That's why I'm like, you're a prick.
And Usher.
Yeah, but Usher's been around him for a long time, though. Usher could have pulled away at any point, really.
But then it's no, because P. Diddy had legal responsibility of Usher.
Yeah, I get that, but not forever.
No.
Do you know what I mean? Like, Usher's like 50 now.
Oh,
he's not that old.
He's got to be pushing 50.
No, I don't think he is.
He's got to be.
He's sexy as fuck, so I don't think he is.
Alexa, how old is Usher?
Usher is 45 years old.
Ah. 50 then, and everyone's Alexa's just gone off now.
And again, I've literally just made everyone's Alexa. Sorry.
I hate it when people do that. I'm like, you fucking, everyone, like the whole house goes off. But yeah, he's fit for 45, isn't he? I thought he's our age.
No.
Oh, yeah, I don't feel that sorry for Usher.
Oh, I do. Well, I don't know. It depends what he's got up to. But if he was sort of groomed and just led into that lifestyle, then I'm sorry, I do feel for him. He was a kid. But we'll see. Like I said,
it's all like being groomed and led into that lifestyle, right? But then if you are then complicit in these parties, that whatever has gone on has gone on, and it's been
like I said, it depends to
young
what,
underage girls.
Yeah, it depends to what. We don't know.
Because his son as well has got a lawsuit against him, isn't he? For like trying to, and it's saying like they were on a boat or whatever, and she told the captain that he'd like tried to like fondle her and stuff, and the captain like shot her down and ended up sacking her. So this captain would have known shit's going on these boats.
Yeah, but
which then makes him complicit.
Yeah. Sad though, isn't it? Because people just follow the money. Like, we'd rather fire the one girl and keep the billionaire.
Yeah,
you know, crazy.
That's it then, isn't it? We've got a lot of cases to cover.
We have, yeah.
I don't think I'm doing P. Diddy though. I think I get right stressed out with it because there's been so many little bits that are going on. It's stressing me out.
I don't think that's going to be one that we're going to touch for a while yet.
No, it's too current, isn't it? It's all coming out.
You'd have to just you'd have to just cover it section by section.
It's going to go on for years. I reckon going to go on for years.
I don't know. I don't think it will.
Nah.
It'll settle a lot out of court.
Yeah, I still think it's going to go on for years yet.
Maybe. I don't know. It'll probably do Jeffrey Epstein and kill himself.
Yeah, wouldn't surprise me. Easy way out, isn't it? Anyway, thank you so much, Cara, for joining us. You've been involved in one of our after chats now as well about absolute random shit. So there you go. You've had your first Briny and Tab experience. How do you feel?
No, thanks for having me. I've enjoyed it. It was good.
You're very welcome. Thank you so much. We appreciate you coming on so much. And if anyone fancies giving it a go, if you think you can do better than Cara, have a shot. If you have a big fat gob, what I was about to say was, I don't know if she could be beat.
Jesus. And now no one will want to come on again. You've ruined it now.
I don't mind. Cara, you've done really, really well. I thought, maybe you'll be nervous and that you've absolutely just flown through it. Well done, love.
Yeah, you have done really well.
I don't know, I say to anyone, if you like true crime, go on, because it's just like a chit chat with you two. It's not, you don't have to be, oh, it's going to sound really bad now, backhanded compliment. You don't have to be particularly professional.
Oh, Sam's just mugged you off, so I wouldn't worry about it. I don't take anything personally.
God. Right.
I know I'm professional.
You're professional.
Recommend it. Thanks for having me.
No problem.
Welcome.
Thank you very much.
All right.
Thanks.
Bye.
Catch you later. Bye.